Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine, episode 52. You know what that means? It means 52 weeks. It means it's been a year.
Woo!
That wooing you heard was your host, Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
I didn't even let you finish. I was so excited.
Happy birthday to us. I'm going to read, in honor of this birthday, I'm going to read a letter as the first thing we do, which is from our friend Amy in the 415 at Trumarin Treats, who said, "Happy birthday. Thanks, gurus, for guiding us in these times of confusion," and enclosed a picture of a cake, which I have right nearby right now. And I'll put a picture in the show notes of it. Is a TV Talk Machine World Tour 2014 to 2015. It has the names of every episode on the top of the cake and the TV Talk Machine logo. So we have a birthday cake. I guess you can't have any of it unless you would like to come over. I'll get you a slice.
I'm trying to keep it lean here. I appreciate the sentiment. Of course, that is amazing. The fan base is amazing.
My kids are very angry that I told them that they couldn't eat it yet because I had to take pictures of it for the podcast. So yeah. they're going to dig into it. It looks great. I should say Amy had her intern make it because she's management now. She had her intern make the cake for us, but still she is the one who gave the order and she deserves all the credit for that. So 1 year later, who knew? We're here.
Yeah. We certainly didn't know. Mm-mm.
No, it seemed highly unlikely. I would not have put money on it at the time.
It was very dubious.
Yeah. But we made it.
Yeah, we did it.
We're here.
In remarkable consistency.
And we're back in the times of confusion now. We got lots of the premieres. Oh. I've got a lot of letters. I'm going to save a lot of those for next week because the premiere, like the wave of new shows kind of crests. I feel like this week, last week and this week are like when all the craziest volume of new shows happens. And then it kind of tails off a little bit. So,
it does,
but
yes.
But so much to talk about this week. Minority Report, which I have to admit you've assigned to me. I have not yet watched it because I've been busy with all this Apple stuff that I do in my other part of my life.
I have noticed that, yes.
But your review, which is, you know, not particularly kind, came out this week.
Not nice.
Now, so tell me the story. Apparently, they withheld a scene from critics. Rather than telling you not to write about it, they just didn't give it to you.
Yeah, and that is a good way to engender goodwill. Mm-hmm.
It shows trust and compassion. Yeah.
And then to sort of like, I loved it though because it was just so beaten down on anyway. And the ratings were terrible. That was like
the ratings were shockingly bad for a show that was really marketed. Nobody watched it.
That show is DOA.
Yeah.
So there is no coming back from that. So not in this.
I guess the precogs should have seen it coming. Oh,
they should have seen that. Oh, precogs. Yeah, it is a mismatch disaster. Everything's wrong with it. They saved some ending that they didn't show us. Hmm. And they were flaunting it. Like, oh, hey, we didn't even show the press. I'm like, oh, right. So now that we know, let us just turn our vitriol and rub it in the fact that no one watched. In fact, I think the thing that I said was, man, if you like, you know, if you really wanted that people to see that ending, you should have stuck it in Blind Spot. Because Blind Spot had 10 million viewers.
Ouch. I watched Blind Spot. I haven't yet watched Minority Report, and maybe, you know, I'll do it just out of obligation, although it's...
You may not even need to do it. It might be dead by then.
It may be. Mm-hmm. But I did watch Blind Spot, or Doodle Booty, as we also know it as here at the TVTM.
Yes, Doodle Booty.
And I thought it was pretty good. It was very definitely like, hey, let's make a show that's kind of like The Blacklist, but mm-hmm. not The Blacklist.
Right.
And I liked it. I think the actress is that the Jamie. What's her name? I don't know.
Jamie.
Mm-hmm. It's like my daughter's name. I think she's really good in a role that could have been thankless or almost impossible. I mean, how do you play somebody who has no memory? Right. She's like a ghost. Like just that could very easily be nothing. And instead, you know, she and the script give her some stuff to do that makes her kind of intriguing. Like you get the sense that the person is there and she's not just this kind of doe-eyed nobody, that she the real person is there, even though she can't remember who she is. That was, I thought, really interesting. Her partner, or the guy, you know, because obvious from moment one that it's like they're going to team up and solve crimes, right?
Yes. It's like moment one. But she's Jamie Alexander, by the way.
Jamie Alexander. She's really good. Her partner is like generic handsome guy. And I didn't find him particularly compelling. And I think they want us to think that he's cooler than I actually read it as. He was just sort of, because he's like in Kentucky doing raids and stuff, and they're like, oh, we need you back in Washington because your name was, or in New York because your name was tattooed on the back of a naked lady. Whatever. But I'm also not convinced that there's any way to resolve the premise of this show that isn't completely ludicrous. But it was really entertaining, so I got to give it that. I mean, like The Blacklist, which is also kind of ludicrous. Maybe it doesn't matter if you buy in. It's that famous buy-in moment where you're like, yeah, okay. It's like National Treasure, except instead of on the back of the Declaration of Independence, it's on a lady's skin.
It's on the lady's skin.
Yeah.
My point exactly about Sullivan Stapleton, who is the lead of that. Mm. I actually came to this realization a couple of days ago and tweeted it out that. Sullivan Stapleton, who was in what was he in? Strike Force. I was about to say Sneak Attack.
Or Strike Back.
Strike Back. Strike Back, Sneak Force.
Yeah,
I was like,
Sneak Force.
I was looking at my brain like, what? Is there a show called Sneak Force? Was I supposed to?
That'll be great on his resume. He said, I started in Sneak Force and Doodle Booty.
I'm thinking to myself, that might be the show that I forgot to review, Sneak Force.
Mm-hmm.
But I think him trying to cover up his Australian accent is not going well. And so I think that Philip Winchester, who stars in The Player, which we'll get to soon, who was the other part of Strike Force, which is a show I really liked on Cinemax. So as I put out on Twitter the other day, if you just flip-flop those characters, right, you could actually have Sullivan Stapleton speaking in his native Australian accent, and he would be able to act a little bit better, and he plays more of a badass. He could play more of a badass in The Player, and then Philip Winchester could be more sort of FBI-ish, which Sullivan Stapleton doesn't appear to be like in this show. He kind of mumbles.
Well, yeah, he just, it didn't, I do wonder sometimes if somebody's not comfortable with an accent if they end up kind of being a little more restrained and tentative because they're just you know, not confident with what they're doing.
It was David Tennant.
Mm.
Uh-huh. In his non-accent American
exactly.
accent.
Exactly. He just shrinks back because he can't really do an American accent.
Yeah, he couldn't act. I mean, he's acting, but he couldn't imbibe the character with some kind of personality. And I think that's the key. I will say that I showed my fall class at the California College of the Arts in our visual studies mm-hmm. class. I showed them, first of all, I had them do some research, but I showed them Blind Spot, and they laughed a lot. Huh. They thought it was, a quarter of them said they would watch it again just to see where it went. They all thought it was mindless, but that it was something they could do while they were doing homework, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, they just thought it was so far-fetched and ridiculous.
Oh, sure. I mean, yes. Ludicrous, like I said, is the word that I kept coming back to, which is this is just ludicrous. This is ridiculous. What would the solution to this be? Why would anybody tattoo detailed clue puzzles? And
right.
at one point Sullivan Stapleton says, as Agent Kurt Weller says, it's a puzzle. It's like, yeah, that's weird, actually, that it's because that, no, that would never happen. But I think it goes a long way on Jamie Alexander. And there is a very nice moment. Also, the Joss Whedon influence, I feel like, is there, where there's that moment where she just starts beating the crap out of the guy who's beating his girlfriend. And she doesn't even know that she has kung fu powers, but she does. And that's a very Buffy or Summer Glau on Firefly. You know, it's the same thing, which is she seems like this kind of run-of-the-mill you know, she's just a regular person, but actually she's a badass who can beat people up. And it's a fun moment. It's not like it isn't something I haven't seen before.
But right. There was no groundbreaking stuff happening on Blindspot.
And I feel for Marianne Jean-Baptiste because she's such a good actor. And they hear somebody doing a fake accent and doing it really well. But boy, they just cast her in the same part. She's like literally playing the same character she played on Without a Trace, I think.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Just, yeah.
She's like, I'll collect that American paycheck. Absolutely. Yeah. I can mail this in, and I can do really I can be great the, stuff in England.
Yeah, I can be the boss of a crime unit.
I know how to do that. Yeah, that's a thing.
Well, anyway, so I watched that one. I got that one, and yeah, it was fun. Doodle Booty.
Doodle Booty did really well. Fun. Ratings wise. So we'll have to see how that does on the second go round. That'll be very very important. But right now, huge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it may actually show the value of even it doesn't matter if your premise is ludicrous in the long run, because if it's enough of a hook at the beginning, and Blacklist certainly played that card. And that was the whole story with Doodle Booty is you won't believe how it starts. And it's like, wow, it starts really interestingly. And, you know, you hook people and then maybe they tune in and they keep watching. And maybe it doesn't matter that in the end it's going to be ridiculous, because what really matters is that they got people to watch, and Fox didn't get Minority Report viewers. So
no, they did not. In fact, and I know this to screw the system up a little bit here. Not that we have a system. We didn't really plan. We don't really plan this. We just roll.
We roll it.
We roll it.
We have no system. No.
No, none. But Scream Queens.
Yes.
Did not do well.
Interesting. And the, you know, the funny thing about that is that we were talking about marketing. That was a show that was super marketed, like Costco marketed. It is more than super marketing.
Yeah,
Costco marketing. It was everywhere. It was on buses. It was in magazines and newspapers, on the web. It was at Comic-Con. I have not been able to escape Scream Queens marketing. And you'd think that would at least get a sample.
Yeah, it did okay, and I'll be interested to see how it goes up, and if it goes up in the L3 and L7 ratings.
Right.
So we'll see if that happens. But here's an interesting thing. So, like, Scream Queens and Minority Report, as we've just said, both of those shows, unbelievable marketing. And Rosewood, a really bad show, and really not marketed that much, other than just let's just show this man's great looking face. It did great because of the halo effect of being next to Empire.
Next Empire,
it was crazy. So I was thinking I was going to wake up in the morning and then the overnight ratings writers would be like, let's fish out the Rosewood's body from the the Florida Keys. And yet, no, he did huge, and everything else did bad. So it's it tells you that that halo effect is still there. I'm not sure people will keep coming back to Rosewood. Yeah. There's nothing there. They'll keep coming back to Empire, of course, but probably not to that. So yeah, that could be three Fox shows in a row that are going to be suspect. I mean, there's a chance that Scream Queens turns around because there could be some delayed viewing on that one. Mm. But the other two, I'm not so sure what's going to happen.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
As we record this, Heroes Reborn was on last night. I have nothing to say about that other than I only watched the first season of Heroes because it ended so badly that I gave up, and so why would I want to revisit that?
Yeah, it did not do well. No. It didn't do bad in the total audience, but it did bad. It did bad in the demo. But both numbers were not impressive, and that doesn't bode well for the second episode, because I think there was a curiosity tune in for the first episode, and then I think either a whole new generation of people who didn't watch and then get disappointed in the original will then turn out for this and become disappointed by this. But no, it didn't do great, so it was not a great start for that.
And The Player, which we established next week, is not based on the movie with Tim Robbins. did premiere, and you had a review of that too.
Yeah, it's really stupid. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, as I said, I think that it's funny because we and our new Hollywood Reporter has a new fall TV section that we're going to link to in
yeah,
the show notes.
Yeah, it's a nice list of all the reviews and who reviewed them. And
yeah, and if you put your cursor over a picture, it kind of gives you the rundown. And if you put it over the player, it says, a nonsensical drama. So they usually take some quote from the review and put it there. And that's kind of what I said. And it was, you know, it's just really, really dumb. Doesn't get better. Like I said, I think Philip Winchester, if he was in... and that's the thing, too. The weird part is it probably would have saved maybe both shows. Because if you move Philip Winchester to Blind Spot, I think that has a little more gravitas going forward. And I don't think it's going to have it, because I think people are going to stumble on Sullivan Stapleton's grasping of the language issue. So, but both shows are in trouble, but The Player is not even unique. It's just stupid. Whereas Blind Spot, you're like, oh, hey, let's find out what's going on with these tattoos.
Right.
Yeah.
So. I should mention, I also watched The Muppets premiere.
Ah, yeah.
Which I don't know if you've seen it, because
what do you think?
You didn't review it. So I laughed quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the challenge, right? It's like The Muppets as an ensemble, there's a lot of funny stuff there, and there's a lot of interesting characters, and you already know them, so they don't have to really establish them. And I found it legitimately funny.
Yes.
I totally get the cognitive dissonance everybody feels mm-hmm. about doing a show like this mm-hmm. where... You know, stuff that got soft pedaled before, things that were almost non sequiturs, that when you're doing a movie about the Muppets, or even like the Muppets Tonight TV show they did in the 90s on ABC, which I actually really liked. It's just off to the side and you don't deal with it. What you do with the non sequiturs is you just ignore them, and maybe it's even funny that you ignore them. So yes, Miss Piggy and Kermit are dating or they're married. There is, if you follow that through, this logical implication that they have a sex life, but we don't talk about that, right? No. And this show has decided, you know, like The Office, which it's sort of modeled after, that they are going to go down some of those things and turn them from non sequiturs into facts. And I totally get why, if you're somebody who grew up with the Muppets, yes, we know that Piggy and Kermit were married, but I don't ever want to think about why Kermit is attracted to pigs and what it means for Kermit's sex life. I don't want to think about that. And this show basically just puts it in your face. And I get why they think that providing tension between Miss Piggy and Kermit makes for a more interesting show. Because there are a couple scenes between them when they're arguing that are really funny. And it's like, yes, this would be less interesting, I think, if they just loved each other, right? It's better that they're kind of on edge. But then, you know... He's talking to his girlfriend, who's kind of this weird pig puppet, mm-hmm. and there's a joke. There is actually a line about Kermit's sex life, and my wife turns to me and is like, okay, this is a little bit too weird for me, right? It's like, it was there, but I didn't have to think about it, and the show makes you think about it. So it's difficult, because I feel like it has a lot going for it, and they have stepped on some landmines, and I don't know whether... they should pull back from the landmines, or whether they should just say, look, the only way we can make this a modern entertaining show is by just barreling in, and you're going to either come with us or not. But it's I've never experienced anything like it, because it was simultaneously actually a pretty darn funny half hour, I thought. And it felt weird.
Right.
It's because of the history, which brought me to it, which is why I was watching it. And yet, even though it was all, like I said, logical, it was just, I don't need, like, Gonzo has a thing for chickens, and somehow I can get away with that and just be like, well, Gonzo, he's a little bit of a weirdo, but Kermit having a pig fetish, it bothers me. It troubles me.
I know, you know. I think it may take more than a couple of episodes to see whether that grates on people. I think there's the curiosity factor for the first episode, and then I think that, you know, we'll see. Will people come back on Tuesday? And I think the second week is going to be it always is anyway, but it's going to be super telling for so many of these shows, because I think that people are going to get a chance to like absorb it. And, you know, some pretty heavy hitters are coming up in the cable world, and that's going to, you know, anybody who right now is basically window shopping just for fun, they're gone once Fargo comes along and The Homeland and The Affair and, you know, it's look out. I mean, if you're in the network business right now, You're on shaky ground.
You got to make an impression. One last thing about the Muppets. I will say this. I think when you're talking about window shopping, I think nostalgia really can only take you so far. And right. So if I was one of the producers of the Muppets, I would probably say I would rather push it a little bit and have it be funny. Mm-hmm. Because people will still watch the show if it's funny, but they will not keep watching the show because they're feeling nostalgic and it's not funny. Right. Like nostalgia right. will get you one or two episodes, but yeah. it's going to have to deliver. And if they feel like the only way they can deliver is by walking a line that kind of creeps some people out, I see why they would give it a try, because the alternative is just being soft and nostalgic. And I don't think there's a show there. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think that there's only so far you can go with the warm fuzzies.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'll tune in something for nostalgia for a week or two, but I'm not going to watch 22 episodes of something because I liked something different.
Yeah, because it reminds you of what when you used to watch the original yeah. when you were younger. No, yeah. that's not going to work for very long. So I agree with you. I agree on that one.
I also didn't watch The Limitless, but it's on the DVR, so I'll just throw that one out there. I've still got The Limitless there, which has gotten terrible reviews too.
But. It's terrible reviews, but then again,
it's
CBS and reviews don't matter. Nope. And so CBS really is, oftentimes CBS shows, they don't cancel too many in the middle of the season.
Right.
Unless they're really putting damage to the rest of the schedule. And usually they don't have an enormous flop. What they have is like underperforming shows.
Right.
By CBS standards. And so they usually wait till the end of the season and then they say, you know what? We tried it, but we didn't like it. So they're the hardest network to read on cancellations.
So what do we have coming up? We got another week of kind of crazy premieres here. Some of them you're reviewing, some of them you have freelancers reviewing, and some of them the Dan, the new guy, gets to review, which is exciting.
Yeah. And, it's been great. I have to say that it's been great to split those up and to have more time to do bigger pieces. I'll be doing more analysis pieces, and it's just great to not be burnt out constantly watching, you know, shows like The Player.
Yeah, you're like on the hamster wheel where you just
Dan and I were mentioning this too. I mean, if somebody can take The Player and somebody else can take Rosewood, then fall becomes a little bit less troublesome, right? I mean, somebody has to in fact, somebody else, we have Keith, one of our freelancers, doing Blood and Oil, which is terrible and that's on this coming Sunday.
That's ABC on Sunday, yeah.
ABC on Sunday, big time throwback, Don Johnson, Delroy Lindo, Chase Crawford. So that one's not good. But we were able to foist that off on somebody else, which is nice. Because there's, you know, I've got Quantico coming up on Sunday. So people who are listening to this can look for my review posted Sunday for that. And
should they watch Quantico?
You know,
give us a hint.
I'm going to say... that's a tough one. I think it's not my thing, and I struggle with that. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about when we get to later. I'm talking about other shows that I'm doing, but that one I struggle with because it's not a show that I would watch because I don't think there's much there. But I think other people will like it.
All right.
And I think it will work for ABC. So there's that. But whether it's high quality, no. But it's the low bar in this fall. So. Low bar.
That's actually one of the nicer things you've said about a show. It's like, is it for me? No. Is it good? No. But maybe it'll be good for ABC. That's like, maybe it'll be good for ABC, raves Tim Goodman. Yeah.
you guys go do your thing. You guys be you. I'm going to go watch Fargo.
ABC, you work on you. Yeah. Monday, Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Yes. And it's another one. It's funny because I did Colbert and I've done most of them. So Dan's going to do Daily Show with Trevor Noah. He's going to sort of watch the first one. Pretty sure that Dan has the same philosophy I do, in that, you know, one show is not a good harbinger for what's to come or what it will be. So there's always that. So in a lot of ways, it's almost like, in fact, just to backtrack for a second, this week, and I can probably find it and we can put it on the show notes, IndieWire interviewed me and Alan Sepinwall and Mo Ryan And by the way, Maureen Ryan just got hired at Variety.
So she's going to be.
Yeah, it's like the trades are buffing up, man. Mm-hmm. Trade war. Here comes a trade war, baby. No, so it's a byproduct of probably what we were doing and buffing up, and they really had to do the same. But it's also a byproduct of just too much TV, and we needed more people to cover it. So anyway, the three of us were interviewed
on Critic Wire by Sam Adams.
Who's great, and he was just talking about like what's the value of reviewing a pilot, and so in some, and we'll link to that. But I think that's the same thing that's happened tonight or Monday night with Trevor Noah. It's like, what can you take from that? You know, and you can't even judge ratings because they're putting it on all the sister stations at the same time. So you don't even really get a sense of his ratings until, you know, the next show by himself, which is only on Comedy Central, not on the sister channels. Then you'll be able to judge his ratings. But then you won't even get a gist of that for probably a month as well. So it'll just be, I think, to see whether he seems comfortable. And like I said in the past, I think in a month we'll know whether the audience came back at all, or if it was just new Trevor Noah fans, younger audience, which I think it's going to be. And I think the Jon Stewart fans will be going either to Colbert or over to HBO. Mm. So there you go with John Oliver.
I've definitely been doing the check on what Colbert did last night while I eat my lunch kind of thing.
Yeah, it's still very interesting to me. I'm still very intrigued by him.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking today, the amount of comedy they're generating is roughly the same. They're doing five nights a week instead of four. Right. But, you know, every episode has the same, pretty much the same amount of scripted bits, I would say. And then there's more, you know, they're probably more interviews, and then there's like a musical guest. But it's, if you boil it down, and if all you really, you know, ever watched the Colbert Report or the Daily Show for was sort of the host comedy bits before the, you know, before the interview, you could essentially still do that with the Late Show with Colbert, and you'd get the same, you know, topical comedy for about 20 minutes that you got with the Daily Show.
Yeah, it's actually longer. It's the thing that's kind of stunning. He doesn't usually bring his first guest out till the 30-minute mark.
Yeah, because there's
it's really odd.
So because he's got in lieu of like a traditional monologue, he's got the stand up before the credits, right?
Right.
And then he goes to the desk and does a commercial break, and then usually comes back with another desk piece, and then the second half of the show is a guest and a musical guest. So you know, yeah, it's basically a half hour comedy show.
Yeah.
If that's what you want to watch, then, and they know it, right? They know people are primarily tuning in for him, I think. And if they get a big guest, then they bring out the guest early. But otherwise, I think they know they want to snag people with the comedy bits. And I think all the other shows do the same thing at this point too, which is, it used to be that they'd force you to watch a guest and then they'd bring in more comedy. Remember, like Letterman always had the mid show comedy break, and that doesn't happen anymore.
Exactly. They get it up front. But not in 30-minute chunks. It's interesting that he's spending so much time doing that. It's really surprising.
Yeah, yeah, it's good stuff too. So
yeah, it's different.
So Tuesday, Fox sitcoms Grandfathered and The Grinder. Now I had heard good things about The Grinder, the Rob Lowe show, and not good things about Grandfathered, the John Stamos show. And if I had to read between the lines of your review that we'll link to, that's in the general direction that like. The Grinder seems like it's fine, and Grandfathered seems like it's not fine.
Yeah, again, it's and it becomes a little tiring, especially with all these network shows where you only have one pilot to keep saying, you know, we only got sent one pilot. It's hard to judge. But I think from those two pilots and from those two shows, which you can watch on the 29th back to back, Grandfathered to me seems like a CBS show. The Grinder seems like a CBS Lite/Fox show. Mm. And I want to see more of The Grinder because it has a very strong cast. And, you know, Rob Lowe is really great in it. And Fred Savage is really great. And Mary Elizabeth Ellis, who was on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You know, William Devane's in it. They don't even give him anything to do in the pilot, really. Mm. But it's got potential. And I think I might have mentioned this. If not, I'll do it here. The Grinder is a show that is kind of winking a lot of times. Hmm. They'll do some funny scenes, like they'll hold the camera a little too long on something. It's kind of winking. They're kind of sending up little tropes. But at the same time, they have two or three other ones that seem maybe a little more sentimental than I would like. So I'm kind of trying to find out where they're going to be in the second and third episodes. Like, I hope they go more towards the less sentimental and just go straight up funny. Although I got to tell you, I don't know where that premise goes on that one. And Grandfathered to me is you really have to like kids and babies. And if you really like the baby stories and kid stories, and The Grinder has a family too, you know, there's family stories there too. But if you really want to talk about babies and parenting, that's what Grandfathered is. And I just found that to be really annoying. But that's, you know, it's funny because I showed it to my class. Here's a very, you know, group of 20-something art school students. And you would think that they would probably be more cynical and go for, like, The Grinder type. But a bunch of them much preferred Grandfathered. They liked, like, that John Stamos could, like, learn a lesson and take something from it. And they didn't like, well, I was teaching them the whole Larry David, no hugging, no learning philosophy, which is partly evident in The Grinder. And a bunch of them, you know, they were kind of evenly split, which kind of surprised me. I thought they would all go for The Grinder instead of The Grandfather. So who knows? Comedy's difficult.
What else?
Well, I will tell you this quickly on, also on Tuesday. By next Tuesday, it'll be its third show. And the first two, because they're live, the best time ever with Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah.
Has not done well, is not getting good reviews, and it's like stressing people out. It's like it's not funny. It's trying too hard. And third time, man, I think that's where you start to see a pretty big drop-off. So next Tuesday, really, really kind of interesting to find out just if that happens. And I think NBC really needed that to work because unless people stick with – Blind Spot, NBC is going to have a really tough fall. Because I think they were sure that Best Time Ever was going to be huge. It's not huge.
What's Code Black and why should I care about Code Black?
Okay, let's work reverse. You do not need to care about it.
Okay, good.
Okay.
What is it that I don't need to care about?
It is a hospital drama. And it's funny because I've been doing these side things. So I think Dan, or maybe we have a freelancer who's doing Code Black, but I was pulled in to do my top five hospital dramas of all time as a sidebar in the magazine. And of course, as I said to them, I don't like hospital dramas to start with.
So it's a list of none.
Right. And B, I'm a hypochondriac and at least shades of it. And that's why I don't like to watch them. They drive me insane. Mm-hmm. But I was still able to pull it together and put my list together. It's a very predictable list.
House, ER?
You know, I wanted to put House on there too. I didn't put House on there. But ER is on there.
All right.
But the one that's going to surprise people, I think, is one of my favorites, which is Contemporary. And it's the only hospital drama that I will actually watch because it's so different, and that's The Nick.
Wow.
Which is about to have its second season premiere, and I will be reviewing that too, but that's like a couple of weeks away, so we'll do that on another podcast.
You know, Chicago Hope was okay until it was terrible, as all David Kelly shows are. ER was very good for a while before then they like kept going for a billion years. St. Elsewhere?
Yeah, they all made the list, so you've got it. So that's you did ER, St. Elsewhere, Chicago Hope. Those made the list, and then you know that I picked The Nick. So that's four. What's the fifth one?
Wow,
not House.
General Hospital.
No, that would be that's a good guess too. It's a little more obvious than you think because it's a little older.
Oh, God, I don't know. Marcus Welby, MD. MASH. MASH is a hospital show. You're right. It is. Mm-hmm. Don't let the tents fool you. It's MASH. You're right. House. So, it's hard not to get House in there.
I know. You know, I thought about doing, and I'm sure my boss would have preferred that I went less classic and just, you know, I was thinking about putting Scrubs on there and House.
Oh, yeah. Scrubs also.
You know, and Children's Hospital and just kind of messing the list up. And then I thought, you know, this doesn't mean much to me anyway. And I could do without 5 years of email hatred.
Yeah.
why didn't you have ER on that? It's going to be bad enough that I don't have Grays on there. So, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah. So this is basically what we're saying is, suffice it to say that when we were asked how Code Black is, the answer is, hey, remember how many good hospital shows there were?
Well, David, Laura was in part of this as well, where we were tweeting out really bad failed hospital dramas, and it was very funny because I don't know if you remember when I reviewed Black Box.
No,
where she's a specialist in mental illness, and she's bipolar and doesn't take her pills. It was such the worst. It was such a mean review. One of my meanest, but not by the meanest ever, but very mean. So I linked. We had a little bit of fun on Twitter talking about this, but to answer your question, no, you don't have to watch Code Black.
Do you remember Mercy Point?
Oh, yeah.
The space hospital.
Oh, my God.
With poor Joe Morton, who is a likable actor in many terrible, terrible things.
Yes. Woo. He's a fine actor. Here's the interesting thing. We'll just do this quickly for Code Black. And okay. You don't know anything about Code Black, so you're the network executive, and you have to buy this show.
Okay.
And I'm pitching you it, okay? And I say, okay, it's a hospital drama. It's the busiest ER room in the country, and one of our stars is Marcia Gay Harden.
Okay.
All right? But the real star of the show, who we think is really going to carry the dramatic element, is Luis Guzman.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I look at Luis Guzman, I'm like, I want to see funny. I want to see something different than you are an ER doctor.
And what I would say is, well, you know, when this sounds a little bit like the same premise as ER, but that had a whole cast of like pretty young doctors. And when you give me Marcia Gay Harden and Luis Guzman, don't get me wrong, those are heavyweights. They're going to be great. But I need some pretty young doctors.
Yeah.
And nurses.
Well, that's what you have to, it's that's the genre. Mm-hmm. It's got to be soapy and sexy. So you got to, I don't know. I don't know. I don't see Luis Guzman, who's funny and great in a much more gritty New York City kind of way. I don't see him as like McDreamy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work.
All right. Let's see what else. Dr. Ken, I hear, is terrible on Friday night.
Yeah, Ken. Dr. Ken is really bad. So it's really bad. So
ABC showing a lot of faith in it, putting it on Friday night.
Yes, right. That is basically them patting Ken Jeong on the head and saying, "No, off to bed you go."
Yeah,
it's got some of the worst Metacritic ratings out there. I think it's 27.
Wow.
So it's in the red. Very bad.
It's not good.
Yeah. And that's also, if anybody reads the link to the Critic Wire thing talking to us critics about
pilots,
Ken Jeong's mentioned in there because there was a critic who made fun of it, and he talked about that on Kate Arthur did it from BuzzFeed. And then Ken said, hey, don't judge it just because it's the pilot. It's a work in progress, which, of course, as you know, that doesn't work anymore. That's old school thinking. But he was out there trying to save negative Twitter feedback. And then everybody was on Twitter saying, well, listen, Ken, if you're the star of this thing, and can you get the network to send us another copy or another episode? He pushed them to get another episode out. And I didn't watch it, but according to Dan, it was fractionally better, so that it was only not very good instead of really not good. So,
fine line there.
I think that's another one people can skip on Friday.
So Thursday, October 1st, I should mention, I've been focusing on kind of new premieres, but we mentioned this last week too, Sleepy Hollow is coming back for season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you and I are both kind of crossing our fingers that they've righted the ship, because season 2 they kind of went down in a hole.
Yes, I really am hoping that they have not sent that screener out. To my knowledge, I haven't seen it. But third season we don't really review them unless you're The Walking Dead at that point.
Right.
But yeah, I'm hopeful for that. Speaking of just shows that are coming back same night, Blacklist. Which is, of course, they fueled the two shows we talked about, which was Blind Spot and The Player. And you know, it's one of those shows that I just kind of love to watch. I keep saying that it's my endorsement. That and Elementary are my endorsements of like watch and now Empire, like watching network TV and having fun again.
Anything else we should talk about for the next week?
I think that's it.
We covered it. How about a couple of listener comments?
Let's do that. Oh, by the way, 1 year, birthday. We should have had more like 1 year old jokes.
Clink.
Something like that.
You told me that babies and families and stuff are not something people want to see. So
yeah, no one wants to see that.
I gotta just stay away from that.
Yeah.
We got Jason from the 864. Wrote in, and that I believe is his Twitter name now. He's got his Twitter handle's Jason R. Berry, but I believe his like full name is Jason from the 864. So that's a nice shout out.
That is very nice.
He says, so far for me, Minority Report forgettably bland. They spent a lot of money but forgot to make it interesting. Give it a miss. And so far, Blind Spot, aka Doodle Booty, is exciting and well put together for network television. I'll tune in again. So that's right in line. Listener David said
he's in Greenville, South Carolina. Yeah. That's what 864 is. I was like, where's 864? Okay. Greenville.
Good knowledge. So
hello, Spartanburg.
Listener David on Twitter said, watching the Minority Report pilot seems more promising than Bastard Machine suggested in this week's TVTM. Dancing with the computer was a thing, but it just didn't bother me that much. And it only lasted a minute. So, another Twitter listener, Coatom, said, not a fan of the movie Limitless, where talking really fast is apparently the equivalent of intelligence. But
yes, that is usually a code.
But the Limitless one, episode one, thank you, nicely done.
Nice callback to the Limitless.
The Limitless one, 101, was okay and pretty entertaining. I'll give it a shot. So there's somebody voting for at least a second episode of the Limitless.
Well, I always like to hear this feedback, and the middle one from Twitter. I did actually respond to his thing, and I just said, okay. I mean, he did say it's better than I said it was, but as I told him, sorry, it's DOA. So this conversation is moot. There is no coming back from the depths of Minority Report. But yeah, I'm always interested to see how generous people are in ways that I wouldn't be, which I mean, that shouldn't be surprising at all, because I'm really like an awful person. I'm like an awful person and a TV critic, so it's really a bad combination. So, of course, there's going to be people who are nicer than I am, but I like people who say, you know what, I tried The Limitless, and I thought it was kind of entertaining. I'm going to give it another try. And that kind of boggles my mind a little bit, like, wow, really? With so much else out there, you're going to do that? But, hey, that's why we have multiple perspectives in this world.
Mm-hmm. Got I think maybe one more for this week. I'll save the rest for next week. And this is from Mina in the 650.
Okay, yes.
And she says, maybe I'm being melodramatic, but I think Mad Men, specifically Matt Weiner, was robbed of the Emmy for best writing on Sunday. I noticed Mad Men was nominated for two different episodes in the same category, which got me thinking about the process of submission and nomination. Specifically, how are specific episodes nominated? Do the writers submit them like a writing sample? If you ask me, Mad Men had the best writing on TV in a long time. This is coming from an avid fan of Game of Thrones as well. I just don't think they compare, at least in this category and for these episodes. Do you agree? Do you think it was a matter of splitting the vote between two excellent Mad Men episodes? Oh, great ones. Please help me make sense of it all. Mina in the 650.
No, I don't think Mina's crazy at all for thinking that. I think that it definitely was robbed in the writing category. It was robbed in the best series category. So it lost to both of them. It lost both categories to Game of Thrones. And it's as I tried to put in my review of the Emmys, I struggled with it. You know, I struggled because I do like Game of Thrones, but that show has so many more problems. And as I mentioned before, at previous podcasts, that critics give Game of Thrones the biggest pass of any critically acclaimed series for all of its indulgences and its weak point. I mean, they call them out on the rape issues, that stuff for sure. I mean, that's well documented, but you know, the slog, it's such a slog to get through that. And the short pacing of, you know, there's too many stories going and they can't, they haven't figured out a good way or a workable way to get all those stories and told well and quickly. It just never should have lost to Mad Men in either of those categories.
Mina has a follow-up, by the way, a little postscript, which is, all of this talk of OG podcast listeners has me feeling a little underappreciated. I have been listening for a long time, since the early days of the old cast. I used to be from It's All in the Burlingame, and am the crazy cat lady who named her cats after Stringer Bell. Tim, remember the time I almost ran down David Simon in the JCC parking lot to tell him such, and how he looked at me with eyes of, oh, you precious San Francisco liberal in your Prius. How quaint. Anyway, just a shout out from me to you guys. Keep up the great work. So that's OG Mina in the 6-5.
I do know that.
It's all in the Burlingame.
That is, you know, that is fun. I actually do remember that night. I do remember that happening, Mina. And even better, I actually thought about this every now and then we give the OG shout outs.
Yep.
And I actually thought, this is crazy to say this, I thought, you know, that's not fair to the new version. Mm. We've got here we are in our first anniversary. We can't just keep rewarding people who were around for the other iterations. I mean, they were crazy, and they gave up great chunks of their lives for that. But, you know, they're all our children. They're all Jews now.
All right. Very nice.
Let's hug. Everybody hug it out.
Okay. We're going to hug it out. Okay. And we will save the rest for episode 53 next week. So if you want to get in touch with us, post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can send us an email, podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. And you can tweet us. I am Jay Snell. Tim is Bastard Machine. And if you want a question to be read on the podcast, tweet it to TVTM. And that's it, Tim. Well, it's been a pleasure. Lots more TV to watch, and I'll see you in a week.
Yes, we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.